is black haired. The man goes dance, you know, she dances rockets.
You know, I saw the Counting Crows. My wife and I actually saw the Counting Crows years ago in Birmingham, Alabama. And every time I hear a Counting Crows song, I think the exact same thought. I saw them way before, you know, they got really popular. Actually, I think even before they had their first album, and they did. They put on a fantastic show. And then years later, I worked with a guy that was his favorite band, and I even looked into, when he got married, I looked into possibly having them come and doing the wedding reception. So I reached out to their agent, you know, this, that, and the other, and it was $250,000 just to even start the conversation. Like, their writer goes, no, the floor of their writer was $250K. So they ended up having a wonderful wedding reception, sans Counting Crows. But every time I hear their songs, I think some of the same thoughts. Archie, we are pleased to have you. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to Drive Through HR. Nisha and I are holding down the fort. Brian's still traveling. And we have a wonderful guest, and we'll get right into it. Archie, if you don't mind, introduce yourself to the audience. Tell us a little bit about you and kind of what you do in the ecosystem that is HR.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you and Nisha and everyone else today. By the way, I'm a Counting Crows fan, so I appreciate the story. I live here in Denver. I've been the executive leader of Optus for the last 5.5 years. I'm not a native of Colorado. I grew up in Louisiana, moved a lot of places around the country in various parts of my career. And just in brief, I spent 25 years in the disability workers' comp and absence management services businesses and running various aspects of a business that is my parent and sister company today. And I'm not an HR person by background. I'm not a technologist by background. I provide services and I've always tried to help my customers create solutions that can help them solve their problems, whether it's been in HR or it's been a disability, employee benefits, or workers' comp insurance arrangement. I have 4 children, and I have to plug Go Tigers, LSU Tigers, because I'm spending a lot of money there, sending my junior daughter to LSU right now. But that's a little bit about me.
Nice. And really quickly on Optus, you know, for those that are familiar and maybe those that aren't, and, you know, I always think it's best when vendors are on the show, because you think you know a vendor, and then all of a sudden a year later, 2 years later, 3 years later, whatever, they go and change and add some different services or features to their products, et cetera. So if you don't mind, tell us a little bit about what Optus does.
Well, it's pretty simple, and I'll try to make it as simple as possible. Our business exists to help organizations better understand all of their disparate people data and manage absence easier. We start and end with really providing a good data structure to provide good data services and business intelligence for organizations, particularly in the HR and the employee benefits area, where they've got so many different parts of their employee benefits and absence data across so many different systems, internally and externally. We provide a robust business intelligence services by taking that data from wherever it might exist, from whatever system it might exist, and we're data agnostic in that sense, is that we don't tell our customers and/or their data vendors or data sources how to send us the data or in what formats they send us the data. And then we organize it so our customers can get good business intelligence out of it. And then the second area, we actually provide a cloud solution to help companies and HR departments manage the whole leave and absence process on an easier and more productive process.
Oh, this is going to be a fantastic show, as I knew it would be. Let's get into what, and I want to ask it twofold. What's keeping you up at night, as a leader, but also what you know is keeping your clients up at night? So you can answer either, and let's just start off with it like that.
Okay. Well, I think one of the biggest challenges and one of the areas in an area, obviously it's close to my heart and close to our mission here at my business, but I think it's incredible with the wave of cloud technology and internet-delivered applications and services, or even enterprise, you know, on-premise type of solutions that have existed obviously forever, but certainly since the wave of technology has come and hit the HR area so rapidly and so robustly, is that leave and absence management is still highly a manual process within HR departments. And I find it amazing because I know that every single one of our customers, once they became a customer, they were doing regulatory leave and absence management manually. And I'm still amazed to this day how many organizations are doing it manually when there's such a complicated and complex process with rules and regulations, federal, state, city laws, and processes that govern regulatory leave processes. And that just continues to amaze me how HR departments and organizations, entire companies, can continue to do that manually successfully for much longer. Because of the challenges that exist, the myriad of rules, it's very complicated, it becomes very complex, and how they can do it in a process that they can apply uniformly and consistently on a fair and equitable basis for all employees. I know that is company's intent to do it on a fair and equitable basis, but I think there are challenges that exist. That's what I believe is a highly untouched area for HR.
Well, Ashi, this is Anisha. Well, this is such an interesting topic for me because in the initial stage of my career, I was doing this leave and absence management payroll at a telecom company back in India. So it's actually a huge company. So we have SAP, so we have technology, but still I was facing this kind of a difficulty when it comes to, you know, the fees are not getting accessed through the system, or employees, they might be outside, so they might not be able to swipe the card. So there are a lot of challenges even if we have the technology in front of us. So I would appreciate if you can describe a little more about the challenges that these small companies that are going to face if they are going to use a manual leave management system.
Okay. Now, thank you very much, Nisha. Well, one of the things that I always ask, and I ask this a lot of HR leaders or other C-suite leaders within companies that we encounter and I've encountered over the years, is that, you know, first, do you know how many people you have absent for any given reason today? They usually can't answer that. Why? Because they don't have a systematic process or program in place to answer that question for them. Secondly, is that, you know, if you do know that answer, do you know why they're absent? And usually they don't know that. And if they don't know that, or if they absolutely do know that, then how can you understand how that's impacting your organization? Whether that be in, you know, hard or soft productivity loss, what are the replacement worker costs potentially for someone who's out on a leave of any type, but certainly a regulatory leave? What's the process of engaging with them and processing with them, communicating with them and the various other internal parties, possibly the medical providers or other persons that you need to get certification from? And then how can I track and manage that process and manage that leave case, if you will, in order to get that person back to work successfully and resolve, while giving them the opportunity to take that leave, that is a protected leave, if you will, under FMLA or under state FML type of process, so that, you know, we can stay engaged with the employee. I believe, an effective or a challenge for HR that does it manually, and, you know, the whole tenet of engaging our employees, whether it be in the talent side or whether it be in the workforce planning and workforce management side, or whether it be in this specific little niche area, it's an employee engagement process, and it's an employee engagement problem. So the challenge is that an organization, I believe, that is doing it manually, how are they able to do it successfully and in a productive manner. I'm preaching to the choir when if HR professionals and leaders are listening, or when I talk to them every day. You know, all of us, doesn't matter if it's HR or it's IT or any kind of department within an organization in a private enterprise, are challenged with budgets. You know, I'd like to have more people to do this function. I believe HR has certainly been challenged over the years and continues to be challenged with in terms of allocating resources to tackle problems, to manage issues, to manage processes on behalf of their employee population. And if they're having to do this manually, then they're probably having to put too many heads on in the process of doing this. Or the challenges are that they're probably not catching everything that they should be catching or could be catching in order to manage the process most efficiently.
You know, it's funny, ladies and gentlemen, when I hear the word manually as it relates to data, and this could be in payroll, this is in succession, anything, anywhere in the employee lifestyle, when I hear the word manually, my brain thinks errors. So that's just as a kind of a frame of reference, or whenever you're interacting with me, when I hear manually, my brain thinks errors. Archie, I'd like to ask you as it relates to data, stop, start, continue, and just kind of, if you can, kind of give us some insight, because you all deal with data every single day. You're comfortable with data. You're comfortable with, you know, the just everything data related. You're comfortable. I think some of the barriers that we have in HR are not already in process and sometimes product, or I think sometimes it's our approach to data, kind of our mental shift of kind of getting really comfortable with a lot of data. But I'd like to kind of get your take on the stop doing, start doing, and continue doing as it relates to data management for HR.
Okay. It's a very broad area. And I guess I'll try to narrow it down and maybe within the confines of, let's say, just disability and absence data, because there's so many different types of HR data. There's, you know, obviously you've got talent data, you know, on prospective employees and newly engaged employees. You've got payroll and time and attendance data. There's so many, you know, you've got employee benefit data. Let me just narrow it in that. I believe, you know, one of the challenges that we encounter and I've seen in my entire career in the disability and absence industry is that not knowing enough information or not having enough broad or aggregate information even about my employee population's disability, workers' comp claim, regulatory absences, because the data exists in so many different places. So I myself, if I'm an employer and let's say I've got, you know, 4,000 employees and I've got a long-term disability program in place with this particular insurer, they also administer my STD plan that I have in place for my employees that's self-insured. My workers' comp is obviously with a different insurer. I have my internal HRIS system and I've got my processes and I may even outsource my payroll to someone else, like one of the big payroll processing providers or such. Well, they each provide me their own aggregate reports about their silo, about what they do. So the challenge exists, how can I aggregate and integrate that information so I can look at a complete picture and story? I've served the insurance markets in providing services across various types for years. And I can tell you, insurance companies don't like to share information and claims information with each other. They think they're giving up something proprietary. Well, most organizations, certainly if they're 4,000 employees or even 500 employees at this day and age, a lot of their programs are going to be on a self-insured or a self-fronted type of basis. So it's your information. So one of the things I always employers to do and HR departments are to do is that when you contract with your insurance providers or your disability, address data in your contract. One, say you will give me access to my data on this periodic basis or on an open periodic basis, however. So I think that's one place to start because employers are challenged to get the data to begin with. Secondly, start simple. Don't try to solve the world. What would I like to know? List all of those sorts of things down. What would I like to know about my employee population around my disability and absence process and trends and costs and such? What would I like to know? Start small. Don't try to solve world hunger in your first stab at it. Get the basic information together and integrated of what you need to know to begin to build a baseline and understand where the history has been before you go and become much more complicated. And then have a continual process to monitor and share that information across your organization, because there's various other parts of a company that needs to have understanding of how that's impacting their operation. Maybe it's a division manager or VP. Maybe it's somebody else across in the other section of an HR. Maybe it's in finance. Pick the areas where you can share that information that it can have the most impact and understanding, so that they can understand the impact. And certainly, of course, share it up to the C-suite level. That's a narrow view, if you will, William. But I believe those are some of the areas that companies can begin on a simple basis, kind of to stop, start, and continue with the data.
Well, I'd like to go back to your first point of absence and leave once again. And I totally agree with you as you talked about, not having enough information from the employer's perspective and from the employee's perspective as well. And as of now, we have technology, so we have all the ways to give a transparency to our employees to make their life a little bit easier when it comes to managing their work and life, right? So I'd like to hear some of the best practices when it comes to the transparency aspect that you do for your clients or that you hear from your clients. What do they do when it comes to give a little bit more transparency about leave and absence procedures and how it works in a company?
That's a very good topic of an area of discussion, Nisha. I've always been a believer of transparency starts and ends with communication. And I'll give you an example of a recent court case. And these are problems under the Family Medical Leave Act and the growth of state rules and legislation that have been put in place around state FML. And obviously complicated now with the joining together the ADA and ADAAA together as it relates to FMLA and regulatory leave and process. And I believe it starts and ends with communication, the transparency process, and having an effective process to manage and track that communication. There was a court case that was decided where a company, they lost a lawsuit brought by a former employee, because that company could not prove that they sent an initial notice to that employee of ever approving their leave in the first place. So one of the problems with the transparency is that, if an employee requests a leave, by law, under FML, if it's a federal, and usually it's a state also, you're required to communicate to that employee to let them know that either what the status of their request is, and then certainly your determination of their request, whether it's approved, denied, pending, all of those sorts of processes. Well, this is a particular lawsuit that this company lost. The company said, well, I did approve it. And then the employee went out for leave. But when the employee failed to return to work after that protected leave time had expired, the company then terminated that employee. Now, this is a very unique and narrow example. However, this employee filed that lawsuit and won the case because the company could not reproduce and show the documentation that they ever had communicated to the employee in the first place. So one of the challenges in doing leave and absence manually, with sticky notes, desk calendars, maybe an Excel file, maybe using some sort of access database or such, is that how can I, prove if I ever have to do it? It's more than just legal risk mitigation, but, transparency starts and ends with having good communications with your employees. That's where I believe the process is. And then having a systematic and a uniform application of, a way to uniformly apply those principles throughout the entire process. You don't have to have a system or a technology to do that. You could do it manually. There are companies that are doing it manually, and they do a pretty good job of it manually. But I liken it to the old days where people had paper claim files in the insurance industry. I've seen employers with paper claim files. I just think potential errors, as William said. So first and foremost, I think transparency is in communication with those employees. I also believe in terms of, and there's statistics and some studies and we've done is that, you know, there's a lot of HR departments that do not have formal enough written policy and process about how they will handle leaves and absences. What's my policy as an organization? Well, once you have that in place, you should have that communicated to your employees also. Here's the expectations. If you ever have to request a regulatory leave outside of PTO, say for example, here's our policy. Make it a part of your employee handbook, per se, if you will.
I know. It's actually funny when I hear this from you. Well, everything is on the policy, everything is on the handbook, but sometimes, you know what, employees, they don't know of all of these policies and procedures, and especially the new employees if you take. So from an HR perspective, they might have to, you know, answer all those questions. It can be silly questions or it can be repeated questions, but they might not they might not did a good job in terms of communicating it effectively to the employees so that they can utilize it or they can do it from their own end. So I would totally appreciate your point in terms of communicating it and giving the transparency. So it will help the employees' life a little easier and the HR's life also so they can focus on more important things.
HR's, I'm not an HR practitioner by experience or background. I've always served in, various facets of the HR function and area within companies, whether it be the insurance side or some processing side like we do now. And, HR has an incredible role and challenge in terms of being both the advocate for the employee as well as representing the employer, the employer's interests in terms of the benefits and the programs and the processes and the rules and procedures, et cetera, that the company wants to establish to have a good workplace and be able to attract a good workforce and have a process for helping those who need to exit successfully for whatever reason. I believe whether it's payroll, whether it's time and attendance, or it's in a good employee benefit. And I think, there's best practices you can look from the rollout of employee benefits that you can take a look at in the whole leave and absence area, particularly on the regulatory absence area. I mean, my medical benefits and such. Most companies have utilized technology today to roll out those benefit plans where I can sign up and do those things. They're best practices that HR can take from the talent area, from the workforce administration area, from the employee benefits area, and apply into the leave and absence management process. But I think the biggest challenge in that transparency is, do you have a program and policy in place to manage leaves and absence whenever they do occur? Because nationally, in the U.S., the average incidence rate for FMLA, not state, just federal, is in the range of 10 to 12%. That excludes PTO, sick leave, all those sorts of things. Sick leave might become a form of FML, but the absence incident rate under FML is 10 to 12%. Companies need to have a process and a communicated policy of how they're going to handle that and what the employee should expect.
Archie, let me ask you a quick question around, regulatory, because you all sit at a really interesting place around, compliance for HR. And, I don't want to say it's kind of like plumbing, but, it is kind of like plumbing in some ways. You're always amazed when you're in a house or a facility that has fantastic plumbing, but no one really likes to talk about plumbing because plumbing technically isn't sexy. But this is the stuff that jams us up. Compliance and regulatory actions that are happening at the local, state, federal, international, these are the things that we can't keep up with. There's no way that any single practitioner can keep up with that. So what I want to ask is about how do y'all keep up with all of those things that are happening, and how do you communicate best practices back to your clients in terms of regulatory issues that they should pay attention to?
Well, we specifically, I mean, without going into, you know, promotion, but I mean, we specifically, we have two legal firms that we engage and are under contract to us. One is just engaged. It's a national firm that all they do is monitor federal, state, city rules, regs, laws that may come into effect, and when any change to those, and as well as some unique case law that may come out or issuance by the Department of Labor, Health and Human Services, whatever, that might impact FEMLA and or other state type of regulatory leave protection processes. And they advise us, okay, here's an upcoming change or here's a new ruling, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then the second law firm that we engage actually helps us with our content of our particular application and our staff knowledge base, if you will, by saying, you know, okay, well, we need to change this particular letter template to replicate and be representative of this new rule change that's going to go into effect October 1, say, for example. Those are the things we do. And we've engaged a couple of other external consultants as it relates to ADA-specific knowledge because we're data experts and we're cloud, you know, we provide a solution that gives an opportunity for an organization to say, hey, I can give you a case management tool set to help you manage the entire leave process from beginning to end. I can't make the decision for the employer. So we provide those types of resources within the application and within our processes itself. And certainly on a consultative level, when we're talking to either existing customers or other persons, other employers in the marketplace, you know, I want to know about their challenges. Do they have a policy in place? Because it's hard for me to engage and implement, help a new customer implement our solution if they don't even have a policy and process in place to begin with. So those are a couple of things that we do, William.
Absolute genius. Thanks, Archie. I want to get your take. We have about 2 minutes left in the show, but I want to get your take on something that's kind of been in action for the last 2 years or 10 years, and it's the concept of unlimited PTO. First of all, is that just kind of a marketing gimmick? Is that an engagement gimmick? Like, what's your take on that?
Well, I probably shouldn't venture into this area, but it's confusing to me. One, as an employer myself. Two, as someone engaged in the industry, I'm challenged with trying to understand what people mean behind unlimited PTO. Does that mean somebody hires me and says you can take PTO whenever you want, as long as you want? I'm challenged with trying to understand what the movement is, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, in situations where I have offered unlimited PTO, people don't generally take it because they don't know the edges, to your point. They don't know the edges. They even though we might not like the 3 weeks off or whatever, vacation time, at least there's edges around it where we can understand it and not understand it, et cetera. But anyhow, I want to get your take while we're chit-chatting. Really quickly, we got about a minute left in the show. Where can people find more about you or your company on the web and a way to contact you?
It's really simple. I mean, there's OPTIS.com. That's our company. We're headquartered here in Denver, and everything that we do is via the cloud and delivered via the internet in the cloud. Specifically, our product, we have our data and business intelligence services, and then our particular leave cloud solution is LeaveExpert.com. We'll be at the HR Tech Conference. We go to SHRM. And we exhibit at several of these industry events per year, and certainly if people want to follow my thoughts or my retweets, and I'll retweet a lot of stuff about absence and FEMLA rules and processes and case law, and my Twitter handle is @Archie Optus.
Awesome. Listen, I told you it would go by really fast, and yes, it has. We are out. Everyone, thank you for listening to Drive Through HR, and have a wonderful weekend and afternoon. Thanks, Archie.
Thank you.